All things reconsidered in about, 30 seconds. All things reconsidered in 30 seconds. Mark. You've reached Bruce Birch, and man, am I glad to be back with you guys this week. What a week it's been, eh? We got a lot to talk about tonight. Not the least of which is the Samuel Alito hearings and the constitutional crisis that this president has gotten us into at this point. So, what do you say we get this show on the road? All right, my name is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to welcome you all to All Things Reconsidered, the weekly radio program that brings you the week in review and tries to provide a progressive point of view, if you will. Now, that's not my term that I'm using. That's Matt Rothschild's. But a progressive point of view to the week's events. And also, I try to coin this term, that we are radio for the compassionate and the interested. Anyway, a couple of housekeeping issues I want to get out of the way first of all before I get too wound up on some other things. And that is that we are streaming world freaking wide on White Rose Society. And you can go to whiterosesociety.org, and there you can hook up with, I think it's over 5 million hours of progressive talk radio, if you're into that sort of thing. And if you're listening to the show, more than likely you are into that sort of thing. So do go over there and check out White Rose Society. The gentleman who runs that site, Ben Birch, is actually not any relation to me, although I would claim him if he were. He does a wonderful service there. We also use his service to stream this program and to archive this program as well. And so you get there going to whiterosesociety.org, and there will be an archive of this program up later on this evening or tomorrow morning or something like that. Another housekeeping announcement is that we are chatting in the Tom Hartman chat room. So if you're, listening to this on a computer, and I certainly hope you are because that's the only way it's going out there, please go to tomhartman.com, TomHartmann.com, click on live chat, and you can go in and chat about the program while the program is going on for the next hour or so. So please do that, and to Tom, man, you're an amazing dude. Thanks for letting all of us progressives take part in creating community there. So thank you very, very much. Also, I'd like to suggest very strongly that during the week, now, I'm only on the weekends, right? But during the week, if you want to hear a great, fantastic, wonderful show from a gentleman out of West Virginia, please do tune in to Bob Kincaid's show, Head On Radio. You can reach that show by going to headonradio.com. He has a fantastic show. Just just a wonderful show. So please do check him out. That's 7 to 10 every night of the week. And he will be live tomorrow night. I understand his show tomorrow night is going to be focused on a lot of Martin Luther King's speeches and writings. And so I'm really looking forward to that program. All right. Well, we are into our 25th show tonight. This is our 25th show since we took to the net waves, if you will. Back in, July of last year, did a couple of shows and realized you can't do this without equipment. So I had to go and get some equipment. And then we started the show back up in August and have been pretty much on every single Sunday aside from one Sunday back in November, December, where I had to go out of town. Every Sunday I've been with you. So there's our milestone for tonight, is that this is the 25th show. Now tonight's show, now we're getting away from the housekeeping stuff and into the real meat of the program. Tonight's show is going to be about a number of different issues, not the least of which is the, you know, Sammy the Squint Alito's selection process. You know, they call it confirmation, but, you know, that's a farce, okay? And we'll talk about some of that later. But and also we want to talk about the unitary presidency theory. Okay, we're going to talk about that also. And we're going to be taking some phone calls after the bottom of the hour, or after the bottom of, around 10:30, after 10:30 or so. But the first thing that I wanted to do was talk about, I do have an interview tonight. Now, last week I said I probably wouldn't have one, but I actually do have an interview tonight. And tonight's interview is actually a really interesting one. During the week, there was a here where I live in North Carolina. I'm involved in a group of the local chapter of World Can't Wait, and this local chapter sponsored a counter recruitment effort in one of the local high schools, and apparently it was a smashing success. And there was just a bunch of literature that was given out, and a lot of great information was shared, and people, you know, really got into this effort and helped to create a wonderful event for that day. And so what I decided I thought would be a really cool thing to do was to try to interview the young lady, the high school senior who actually coordinated this entire effort in her high school. So during this show tonight, we will hear from Georgia Frierson, who is a senior at Grimsley High School here in Greensboro, North Carolina. And she's going to tell us about how it went down. We had a great talk yesterday afternoon, and I got to tell you, I'm very impressed by this young lady. She really, I look for her to go far, very, very far. So we're gonna get over to that in a minute. But before we do, I wanted to set it up a little bit, and I wanted to read you something that I think is that I read and it touched my heart, and that is that. There's an article that I read that I found, and this is a magazine called Freezer Box Magazine. Really great title, Freezer Box Magazine. But here's the title of the article. It's by a guy named Stuart Nussbaumer, and the title of the article is called No Champagne at Walter Reed. In the dining hall is a family of three. The mother's shirt says, Thank a Soldier. The father's hat says, Vietnam Veteran, and the son's t-shirt says, Seattle Sonics. A normal family, except the son has no legs. The tough-talking lions of the Bush administration proclaimed shock and awe would destroy the Iraqi will to fight, and then it would be a simple cakewalk. So the cocky civilians unleashed the mother of all air assaults on Baghdad, and then our strutting commander-in-chief, decked out in a fine flight suit, proclaimed, Mission accomplished. But the flight suit president dodged the Vietnam War, hiding in the Air National Guard's Champagne unit, strongly supporting the war from Texas. The vice president had other options, although he insisted other Americans had no option but to fight the war. The Secretary of Defense enrolled in Princeton University instead of the Korean War. After the war, he enrolled in the Navy. All the hawkish neocons were too busy arguing for the Vietnam War to actually fight in the war. Shame. They missed their noble causes. So when it came to Iraq, none of these men had a clue about the will to fight. I see in the halls of Walter Reed Hospital soldiers with leg braces and neck supports, soldiers with faces slashed by bombs and stitched up by doctors, soldiers with legs terribly mangled, soldiers with no legs, amputees with short stumps, with long stumps, without any stumps, since entire limbs were missing. A man walks by without an arm. I suddenly travel back in time to another war, to another hospital, where I was one of those young men without a limb. But the human carnage and waste in Walter Reed is too overwhelming to escape for more than a flash of time. At the Army's flagship medical facility, where thousands of wounded soldiers pass through, there is no political spin, no media filter, no presidential lies, and no patriotism without cost, as there is in America. There are only the wounded and mangled from Iraq. There is the ground zero for ugly war reality. For these men and women, there was no safe champagne unit, no other options, no Ivy League hiding, no just talking while others did the fighting. At Walter Reed, there are not chicken hawks. So let's talk about counter-recruitment for a minute, shall we? Because we all know that the true cost of this war is broken families and is broken limbs, broken spirits. People who thought that they were going to fight for a noble cause only came to find out that, as a result of the Downing Street memo, they were fighting over, for a lie. And yet the recruiters are still out there trying to sell this lie, trying to sell this war as if it were some sort of patriotic call to arms to defend freedom. Well, if we were defending freedom, then how come none of those people from Iraq were involved in September the 11th? If we were truly defending freedom and we were attacking those and going after those who attacked us, then maybe we should be in Saudi Arabia, right? Because that's 15 of the 19 hijackers came from Saudi Arabia. I mean, let's look at look at demographics, perhaps. But those recruiters, they're going into our high schools. I got to tell you, there's another thing called as part of a No Child Left Behind. There's a little known feature of that that says that if your child is of, I think it's like 15 to 18, that their information is furnished directly to military recruiters unless you choose to opt out of it. So if you're listening to this and you have kids that age, I would strongly recommend that you go to AFSC.org, that's American Friends Service Committee website, and check that out about enlisting your kid. I mean, let's put it this way. Defending America is one thing, and I want to make this very clear. I am not completely anti-military, because, to me it's like, however, I am against imperialistic war, okay? It's my understanding, and I read this actually recently in a book by a gentleman named Tom Hartman, is that in democracies we fight defensive wars, not offensive war. Now, this president changed that with his war against Iraq. They called it preemptive. Well, what it is offensive. What it was, an attack on a country that had not attacked us. So now if you join the military, the chances are you're going to go fight a war against somebody who hasn't attacked us. Now they're starting to beat the war drums against Iran. So we have a choice to make, I think. And I think, my choice is that, I don't want to see some young kid who doesn't know his butt from a hole in the ground end up in the military and get his ass blown off for a cause that he doesn't even have any inkling as why he's there. But he's there because he's supposed to be spreading freedom. Gosh. Okay, listen, we're going to take a real quick, we're going to take a real quick break. As soon as we come back from the break, we're going to have the interview with Georgia Frierson about counter-recruitment and about the event that she held in her high school here in Guilford County, North Carolina, which was the first one in Guilford County and perhaps the first one in the entire state. according to the American Friends Service Committee, there's no other activities in this state. So we'll take a quick 2 or 3 minute break, or however long is needed, and we'll be right back.
Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my Progressive Point of View, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. I suppose it's fitting that Bush went to the VFW to rally support for his war effort, because it was at a VFW gathering back in August of 2002 that Cheney revved up the propaganda machine for the war in the first place. Bush's speech on Tuesday was more of the same. He used the word victory at least 11 times, including 5 in one paragraph, which is an indoor record. Not a coincidence, though. One of his PR advisors told him that the American people will support the Iraq war only if they think it can be won. So victory is the word of the year for Bush. And smear is the tactic of the year, and every year, for Bush. Bringing out the big guns, he said that politicians who dare to suggest that he misled the American people, or that he's in Iraq for oil, and where would they possibly get those ideas, are giving comfort to our enemies. That phrase has got a little ring to it, doesn't it? It's the constitutional definition of treason. The guy's got chutzpah, that's for sure. He plunges the nation into an illegal war on false premises, and then he dares to imply that his critics are traitors? By now, he's scraped the bottom of the barrel clean. I'm Matt Rothschild.
This is Mark Crispin Miller. The world can't wait to drive out the Bush regime. On January 31st, Bush will give his State of the Union address, but we can say right now that the Union is in a state of emergency. The Bush regime is out to remake the world. An Orwellian police state, endless war, religious tyranny, no dissent, no free thought, a ruined planet. This regime is immoral, unjust, unelected, and indictably criminal, and we must stop it. On Tuesday, January 31st, during Bush's State of the Union address, we will mount protests all across the country. We will demand that Bush step down. Then, on Saturday, February 4th, join us in Washington, D.C., and we will bring our demand right to the White House. Bush lied. Bush spied. Bush must step down. Find us today, worldcantwait.org, 866-973-4460.
He's back!
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night, headonradio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember him. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts. The issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
All All right, you're back with Bruce Birch, and this is All Things Reconsidered. I would like to welcome you back to the show. We're going to do run a quick interview with my friend Georgia Frierson from here in Greensboro, and she is oh my goodness, and she sent me a bio earlier today, and now I've got to find it. Oh, there it is. She's a Grimsley High School senior interested in mobilizing students to become politically active. She has been involved in grassroots environmental protection since she was 7 years old, and she spearheaded a voter registration drive at her school in 2004. So let's go ahead and run that interview, and as soon as we get done with this interview, after this interview, we'll take another quick break, and then we'll do some calls. And here she is. This is my interview with Georgia Frierson, Grimsley High School, Greensboro, North Carolina. And let's try that again.
All right, I'm talking with Georgia Frierson, and Georgia is a senior at Grimsley High School in Greensboro, North Carolina. And Georgia recently coordinated a counter-recruitment effort, which was sponsored by World Can't Wait here locally. And apparently, this was a smashing success. But before we get too much into the event of the day, I just wanted to ask you, Georgia. Well, welcome to All Things Reconsidered to begin with.
Thank you.
but I also wanted to ask you, what sort of motivated you to want to do this counter recruitment?
I heard through World Can't Wait about the story of a woman in Wilkes County who was very interested in getting into the high schools and middle schools in the area, and you know, there were four high schools in Wilkes County that she wanted to talk to, and she was denied to go into all four of them. Mm-hmm. And so the ACLU finally got involved and sent a letter to the superintendent of those schools and mm-hmm. said that basically you can't only present one side of the story. You have to be able to have something to balance that out. And
sure.
So basically what they're doing by banning her from those schools was illegal. Mm-hmm. And so that really, that kind of fired me up and made me interested in trying to bring something like that to Grimsley.
Okay.
And I have the feeling, you know, when I met Grimsley that it's a pretty liberal, open-minded school with, you know, it promotes discussion. And so I thought that Grimsley would be a great place to start
okay.
something like this.
And Grimsley High School has housed approximately how many students?
Anywhere from 2,000 to 1,800 kids, probably.
Okay, so quite a few.
Yeah,
quite a few.
It's a pretty big high school.
Pretty big high school, and this is in Greensboro, North Carolina, which has a population of around 25,000, with the entire county surrounding about 500,000 or
yeah.
so. When you decided you wanted to get involved with this, what was the process you went about sort of coordinate or you know planning and coordinating?
Well, I worked closely with World Can't Wait. They provided a lot of the literature for me and stuff like that. But the first step was really just to make sure that it was okay with my principal.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of informally just passed each other in the hallway, and I just mentioned to him, you know, would it be okay if I had a recruitment table, a counter-recruitment table at Grimsley? And he's like, yeah, sure, that's fine, whatever, you know. And so I just...
did he actually hear you?
you never really know. So that was right before Christmas break. And then, you know, school got back in around the 2nd, and I wasn't sure if he'd even remembered. So mm-hmm. I went and talked to him again, and he was very enthusiastic about
really?
It. He's a great principal. He's very open-minded, and he wants a lot. He really encourages discussion at Grimsley. So
okay.
he said that was fine. And then from there, I just basically organized other students that I thought would be interested. And we worked with the Campus Anti-War Network and mm-hmm. got a few UNCG students to come to Grimsley.
Okay.
And we just, on the day of, we just set up a big table and had all this different kind of literature and people who knew a lot about it to talk to everybody, and it was a big success.
So your planning basically went that you approached the school first.
Yeah.
And then once you got a verbal okay, and the reason why I'm sort of like trying to nail this down because there are going to be other people who are going to be listening to this broadcast and are going to say, I want to get my local school doing this, and I want to
yeah.
get, maybe my kid would be interested, or maybe you know, or maybe someone's a teacher,
yeah,
and who is sponsoring a group and says, well, you know what, maybe we'd like to do this. So you got in touch with your principal first.
Mm-hmm.
You sat down with the principal, and the principal's okay with it. Now, This is a hypothetical. What if your principal had been had opposed this? Were you prepared to take it to any length?
Yes, I was. I would have taken this to all sorts of lengths because I knew that since in Wilkes County it had been proven, you know, the ACLU had decided to fight what Wilkes County schools were doing, I knew that I would have someone to back me up, and it would probably be the ACLU. And so we actually had a, you know, backup plan saying that if he said no, we were going to get the Greensboro chapter of the ACLU involved.
Okay.
And so hypothetically, if he had said no, we would have gotten someone from the ACLU to help us then further, you know, pursue what we were trying to do.
Okay. So you already had a plan in place to deal with that now.
Yeah.
Where did you get material? I mean, I know you noticed you mentioned World Can't Wait, but are there other resources that people can go to, perhaps online, or to get materials about kind of recruitment?
We got a lot of information from the National Friends Service Committee.
Okay.
And their website actually has a whole section for students about how to begin a counter-recruitment table at your school. And they have a lot of brochures, a lot of literature and stuff like that. And it, you know, really just reading the stuff on their website can, you can kind of inform yourself, you know. So it's a great website, and that's basically, I got a lot of my information from there.
I think that's American Friends Service Committee, but
that's at
afsc.org. They do have an incredible amount of stuff. There was another site that I think, and you know, I was talking with one of the other gentlemen that I think may also be on this interview or involved in this story at some point, who mentioned a website called QuakerHouse.org.
I never actually checked that out, but I think some of our information probably did come from that website.
Okay. Did you have, so you had the Campus Anti-War Network, which is a... which is an organization that is from one of the local colleges, is that right?
Yeah, I'm not sure how widely based they are, but the chapter we had with us was from, four UNCG students that came and helped us out, and, you know, we're trying to get a chapter of the Campus Anti-War Network set up at Grimsley.
Okay.
So
you have your own independent chapter there, is that what you're... Okay.
We're working towards that.
Okay.
It's coming along now.
Okay. So that the day of, let's talk about that a little bit. When you got things together, you're able to get a table, you're able to, you know, put out some literature. What kinds of literature did you lay? I mean, what did you have? Was it inflammatory, or was it fairly just fact-based stuff? Or
It was a little bit of both. You know, we wanted to keep it, you know, to the issues, but some of the stuff that we put on the table, obviously, people are going to get outraged about, even though it was fact-based, you know, like, if they don't agree with it, they're going to be outraged by it.
Sure.
So we had a few people who were, you know, pretty hot about some of the stuff that was on our table, but it was mostly grabbed up, and it was like a feeding frenzy. People loved it.
So people walked up just like grabbing stuff up and
around.
Well, tell me about some of those people that were outraged. How did you deal with those
people?
Because, you know, the other thing about this, and I just, before you answer the question, the other thing about this is that in a lot of schools around the United States, you know, there are places that are very rural where someone may want to do this, but may not feel that that they have as much support as you did in doing yours. And they may be facing a lot more opposition. So how did you deal with those folks who came up and were morally outraged that you could dare do something like tell people to not join the military and go get shot at?
Well, the first rule that I made for myself personally was that if someone already really has their mind made up about something, you know, like if a member of the JROTC, for instance, at Grimsley came up to speak to me about it and were very argumentative, I wasn't going to put myself out there to argue with them then, because that wasn't my purpose of being there that day. I was trying to inform people who may not know about their other options and may not know the negative points of the military. I wasn't there to argue with someone. So if someone wanted to argue with me, you know, I was willing to, you know, hash it out for a minute, but I would basically just say, you know, towards the end, I'm sorry, but I'm really not here to argue with you today. But if you want to debate with me some other time, that'd be great, you know? today I'm just trying to get the information out, but I am interested in having a discussion with you.
Okay.
But right now is not really the best time for that.
Did you actually, some of the people that you that encountered, could you tell us about one of the engagements, if you want to call it that?
Yeah, there was I guess he was probably a junior, who was just, he thought everything at our table was just a lie, and he didn't think any of it was fact-based, and, he went on and on about what a great leader George Bush is, and, how we're doing the right thing by being in the military, and blah, 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 and he just basically thought that everything on our table wasn't fact-based, and there's really no way to argue with a person like that. If they don't think it's a fact, then all you can say is, well, here's where I got it. It is a fact, so that, you can't really,
right.
You can't change people's minds sometimes.
Right. Well, and I think that, and this is just in a historical context, is that a lot of the conservative people have, for the last 15 years, listened to people like Rush Limbaugh and others who have basically discounted every form of media that there is, radio, television, print, internet, so that, when guys like him read something, they automatically, in the back of their head, they automatically hear this little thing says, liberal media, liberal media, so
yeah.
They can't believe it. And the only thing that they can believe is, what the hate mongers spew.
Yeah.
So I think there's some of that to contend with in this kind of situation. So that day, you had a feeding frenzy. About, for instance, how many flyers did you print up, or how many different pieces of literature?
On our table, we had probably 15 or 20 different brochures and different, pieces of information. And then, we had probably 50 or 60 copies of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one particularly informative flyer printed by The World Can't Wait,
mm-hmm.
and we had probably more like 100 copies of this. And by the end of the day, or I guess it was just for two lunch periods, but by the end of the lunch periods, our table, had been wiped out. People had just really...
completely gone.
Not completely gone, but, the stacks had gotten a lot thinner, and people had really, eaten it up.
How many people, did you have a way to sort of track those that that expressed a lot of interest?
Yeah, those that expressed, people that really wanted to help and, participate in the next counter-recruitment table that we do, we had a sign-up sheet for their email addresses and their name and all that stuff, and we got over 50 people, close to 60 people that signed that list.
Wow.
So.
How many people do you think were able to see, was it the whole school that was able to see what you were doing that day?
Well, unfortunately, seniors at Grimsley have off-campus lunch privileges, and so we couldn't get to any of the seniors except for the few that stayed. So, it was mostly underclassmen that got the information. So
that's
to
probably
say,
even better, though.
Yeah.
You
to
know.
Say that you got 60 people who were really interested only out of three grades, that's a lot. That's a pretty big...
That's actually fantastic.
Yeah.
You did a fantastic job. So what role did World... besides sort of being supportive of the event and getting you some literature, did World Can't Wait play any other sort of integral role in this event?
Tim Hopkins really, he was a very big supporter of the whole thing, and he really worked to, we were supposed to have a speaker from the Gulf War who now speaks out against war and the tactics that they use,
mm-hmm.
but he got the flu, so he couldn't show up, but Tim had organized all of that, and we had plans for him to come,
mm-hmm.
but it just didn't work out, but we're going to do another one, and he'll be there, hopefully. Mm-hmm.
In full military regalia, let's hope,
because
that would be, very impactful.
Yeah.
How often do you plan on doing this?
This time we were just trying to push it forward, do one as quickly as we could, and so there were no military recruiters there, but the next time I want to do it while the military recruiters are at our school, sit next to them and we'll kind of, each try to influence our own crowd, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty gutsy.
Yeah.
Because a lot of those, and I don't want to, scare you, but a lot of those guys are trained to deal with this kind of stuff. So I applaud you. And you know what? When you do that, let me know, and I'll show up with my microphone in tow.
Yeah.
And I'll interview them and you. And, you know, it will be an interesting...
That would be very interesting.
Interesting show. So I'm talking with Georgia Frierson of Grimsley High School in Greensboro, North Carolina. And Georgia successfully coordinated the first counter-recruitment event in Guilford County and perhaps even in the state of North Carolina. And Georgia, thank you so much for coming on. Is there anything, you know, before we close out this interview, is there anything that you would like to impart to anyone who is out there who might be planning or, you know, hearing this and going, wow, okay, yes, I'm going to do one too. Is there anything you want to tell them? Is there anything that you found that was especially helpful or, you know, that you found wasn't especially helpful?
Yeah, just don't be discouraged and make sure you have a network of people who are willing to help you out. And the most important part that I found while I was sitting at the table was that I was educated about the information that I was talking about. So just educate yourself and, you know, check out those two websites that we talked about and try to find a network of people that are willing to help you. Not really.
And don't forget the tape.
Yeah, don't forget the tape.
Okay. All right, well, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
And we'll be right back.
All right, this is Bruce Birch with All Things Reconsidered. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Thanks for joining us.
Sara Taylor. The world can't wait. Drive out the Bush regime. On January 31st, Bush will give his State of the Union address, but we already know that the state of this union is a state of emergency. The Bush regime is out to remake the world. Endless war, an Orwellian police state, religious tyranny, no dissent, no critical thought, no right to abortion, a ruined planet. This regime is immoral. It's unjust, and it's indictably criminal. We must stop it. On Tuesday, January 31st, when Bush gives his State of the Union address, protest across the country demand Bush step down. The next Saturday, February 4th, join us in Washington, D.C. to bring our demand right to the White House. Bush lied. Bush spied. Bush must step down. Find us today, worldcantwait.org, 866-973-4463.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my Progressive Point of View, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. The Alito hearings are just about up, and the evidence is in. Alito's a Weasley arch-conservative who worked his way up the ladder on the right every rung of the way, starting out in college, when he joined the Concerned Alumni of Princeton, a group that wanted to bar those ivy doors to women and minorities and gays. It's one thing to have a youthful flirtation with such loathsome types, but to boast about that flirtation as an adult and a job application to the Reagan administration, that's another thing entirely. Then there's Alito's Clinton-esque response to a question by Dianne Feinstein about whether Roe v. Wade is well-settled law by now. Answered Alito, it depends on what one means by the term well-settled. How about surviving more than three decades of legal challenges? Is that well-settled enough for you? Then there's Alito's indifference to invasions of privacy, ruling in one case that the police could strip search a 10-year-old girl without a warrant. And on top of all that, there's Alito's view that the President of the United States has unitary power, and that the Attorney General can't be sued for illegal wiretaps. No wonder Bush and Gonzalez like this guy so much. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's...
All right, I'd like to welcome you back to All Things Reconsidered with Bruce Birch. what a great interview, huh? What a great interview. That young lady, Georgia, if you're listening, fantastic. Good on you. You're doing a fantastic job there at Grimsley High School. And, you know, gosh, I mean, if half of the kids in the country had the energy and the spirit that this young lady has to take out and to run with something like this, we wouldn't have a problem with war now, would we? No, we wouldn't. We certainly wouldn't. And you know what? I'm going to keep track of Georgia. She may invite me to the Oval Office someday. Time will tell. All right, so we're back. All things reconsidered. You can come to the Tom Hartman chat room if you're interested in chatting with other people about the program. You can do that. TomHartman.com, T-H-O-M Hartman with two N's .com. Then click live chat, and it'll shoot you right in there. We are streaming world freaking wide with WhiteRoseSociety.org. I have my little paper here to remind me of stuff. And we're also doing a lot of other stuff all of the time, but I promised you that I would get into the Samuel Alito hearings, and I'm going to do that right now. And by the way, if you would like to, if you want to call into the program, you can do that by dialing 336-856-2855. You can dial into the program by calling 336-856-2855. We may have time for one call or two, maybe, before the end of the show. But I do want to get into this Samuel Alito situation, because I think that what we're seeing, everything that I've read is saying that the Democrats are not going to filibuster this guy. And I really can't, to me, it's beyond me why in the world these guys, these Democrats and these guys and these ladies in Washington would not want to filibuster this guy, because he is so much worse than John Roberts. It's not even funny. And the reason why I'm saying that, John Roberts, of course, is the new Chief Justice who replaced, many said this gentleman that he replaced, Rehnquist, was a pragmatist on the Supreme Court. And he was, for the most part, but he was also another, right-wing guy. And so he basically, was another lockstep goose-stepper. Along with those guys. But this gentleman Alito, now why should we filibuster him? Okay, well let's look at a couple of issues. All right. Alito tends to look at every case that he interprets. He's one of those guys that they come up with all these terms and these terminologies. They call themselves originalists or strict constructionists or whatever. But what they're trying to tell you when they say that is that this particular judge, or how he's going to rule, is really about striking down or not supporting any sort of wider view of the Constitution, okay? What they're about is strictly looking at black and white. Okay, these guys are the fundamentalists of the judicial branch of government, okay? And there's no difference between Alito being a fundamentalist judge than there is in Jerry Falwell up there at Liberty University being a fundamentalist Christian. It just happens to be two different books. One is the Constitution and the other one is the Bible, okay? And I dare say that Alito is going to bring the Bible into some of his deliberations. Roe v. Wade, he says that, asked if Roe v. Wade was settled case law, he says, if settled means that it can't be reexamined, then that's one thing. If settled means that it's a precedent that is entitled to respect as stare decisis, or decisis, and all of the factors that I've mentioned come into play, then it is a precedent that is protected, entitled to respect. That statement is what I call hedging your bets. that's like answering. I mean, that's a typical politician's answer. Anyway, this guy has ruled in favor of the government, has given the government wide, wide latitude with regard to search and seizure, with regard to any number of things. So, we put him on the court, and basically we've got a 6-3 court, okay? Six meaning six on the right wing side, three on the left side. Or even and I wouldn't even say three on the left side, I would say three on the middle side. Because the ones that are on the right side on the court are so far right, you know, that, I mean, anything to the left of them is right center. But anyway, I wanted to bring that up. If you want to talk about Alito, you can call me at 336-856-2855. You can also email me, allthings@allthingsreconsidered.org. We'll get you into my email box, and you can comment on the Alito hearings that way, or lack of hearings, I should say. You know, it was really, you know, listening to some of those thugs talk about, you know, it just amazes me. You know, they were here is a whole panel of senators, you know, raising hell about Alito being a member of the constitutional, concerned alumni of Princeton, okay? I mean, they're all concerned about him being a member of this, saying, you know, that, oh, you only want white people a part of Princeton, and you only want, you know, you don't want gay men, you don't want women there, you only want men, all this kind of stuff about him being a member of this group. But then when you turn around and looked at all the senators, there wasn't a black person there wasn't a black person up there. So, I don't know. You know, I'm just calling that for what it is. For how I saw it, anyway. I do want to mention this story, though. I'm going to move away from Alito for the moment and see what we have here. We do have a call coming in. Let's check this and see who we got on the line. All right, you're on All Things Reconsidered. Who am I speaking with?
Hey, Gonzo Greeton.
All right, it's my friend Spike. Spike called in last week. Spike, how's it going up in Eastern PA? Excuse me.
It's going all right. Police department made it on the countdown with Overman as being one of the worst of the day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they arrested someone with a name, and turns out they had the wrong person, because the person they were looking for with that name, I guess, was white, and they just picked up the first black person that had that name.
No.
So they got a little bit of trouble for that one. yet another lawsuit against the police department. God knows how many that is at this point, including slain police officer's widow suing from another cop shooting him in the locker room with his own gun. That still hasn't yet to be officially solved. So it's not looking good for the police department these days.
And that's in Easton, or is that in Philadelphia?
What's that?
Is that in Easton or in Philadelphia?
That's in Easton.
Okay. Okay.
So that's only a city of about maybe 30,000, roughly, and we have a police department with as much corruption problems as the biggest cities you could probably think of.
Really?
Yeah. And by the way, as I speak to you, Justice Sunday 3 is live on my TV here in the Lehigh Valley. They're really going at it, but it's Sunday night of the FMZ, so all the people who would be into that are probably already asleep because they have to wake up at 5 in the morning and do nothing all day.
So this is a replay of what happened last week?
Yeah, I guess it's on a delay.
Okay.
I have no idea how this propaganda work, other than that they're going to catapult it, I'm quite sure.
That's part of the deal, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. If you catapult it enough times, I guess that's how you get the propaganda across.
That's right. I got that clip here somewhere, but I'm not going to try to find it. You did a good job, so.
I have a few good things I also wrote down and printed up real quick here.
Okay.
A little fun with numbers, 2100. That would be the minimum number of jobs U.S. newspapers will cut from the year 2005. Minimum, which means they're still not sure exactly how many. That's from all departments of newspapers in this country, which is good in a time of war that we're slimming down newspapers. 12 is the magic number in this case of Iraqi newspapers, a PR firm working for the Pentagon, is paying to catapult the propaganda, which is interesting that our government's spending more money on newspapers in Iraq, and yet that industry seems to be dying over here. But no one seems to want to talk about that in the TV news, which is no surprise. And, of course, my favorite when we're talking numbers with the media, and I have to talk about TV, so the $13,000, $13,998.55, which is the amount Fox News compensated Tom DeLay for a round trip from Sugar Land to the Beltway so he could appear on Fox News Sunday after he was indicted. And I mean, how nice of Roger Ailes to pay for that. I mean, what a sweetheart of a guy.
They actually paid him instead of sending out a remote.
Yeah. Yeah. $13,000 to go from Texas to D.C. for one day to appear on TV. That's one heck of an airline.
I was going
to
say it.
Hooters Air probably could have done it for about $1,200.
And rented him the whole plane.
And he probably would have enjoyed that, to be honest with you. He's a politician. They're all sliny. Just he didn't want to see boobies. My wife's a Republican. And lastly, I'm thinking of almost turning this into a regular thing. latest thing from Osama bin Robertson's website.
Okay.
Where people ask him questions and he gives answers. Kind of like what Sistani does over in Iraq. And by the way, Sistani wants to ban chess in Iraq.
He wants to ban chess.
The question is, my high school has all these different programs that support homosexuals. I recently found out that one of my close friends was a homosexual, so I attended some events with him just to show him he's still my friend. Is this going too far? How do I show him he's still my friend without making him think I approve of his lifestyle? Which, by the way, we haven't gotten to his answer yet. The question's already a little too over the top.
That's a little loaded, isn't it? Yeah.
And now here's the fatwa from Osama bin Robertson himself. And it's... go to those homosexual events, then you are approving of his lifestyle and thinking it's okay. The Bible says, quote, have nothing to do with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them, quote. We as Christians always want to be nice people, quote. Well, I don't offend him, it might hurt my witness, quote. And all this stuff, well, I'm sorry, the Bible says, quote, have nothing to do with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them, quote. If you go to these places, the next thing you know, you will be enticed into their lifestyle instead of him being enticed to yours. I strongly advise against it. If you have to go get another friend or other friend, do so. It's a pity. I would certainly pray for him, but I just don't think I'd go into that game.
Wow.
What a Christian, if I ever saw one, with a capital C.
Well, you know, this is a guy who says we need to have Chavez assassinated. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me. I'm surprised he didn't say to the guy, you know, instead of trying to save him and convert him to Christianity, why don't you just, you know, beat him and drag him around behind a pickup truck?
Certainly. I'm surprised he hasn't issued a fatwa to assassinate some gay, you know, Sonny and Cher's daughter who's a lesbian activist or something. I mean... He's on such a rant over and over. He's such a radical guy, and yet the mainstream still gives him some credibility somehow. I mean, this guy should be out. I mean, say what you want about Stern. People chase him off the radio, essentially, because of juvenile humor. This guy, he wants the blood of people who don't support him. I mean, you can't get any more radical than that. I mean, I left a really... I have it on my voicemail. When I wrote it down, I put it in someone's car. I had a rant and letter I left in someone's car in the mall parking lot recently because they had all this stuff about Christ, and then they had a Bush Cheney sticker, a 700 Club sticker about, you know, marriages between a man and a woman because, you know, apparently if there isn't a penis and a vagina involved, everything comes to an end. And
it's a good thing you didn't make me have to cut you off.
Yeah. And... He then had a sticker that says, you can't fight terrorism with spitballs.
Oh, gosh.
Republican.
Yeah.
Kind of killed me because Osama bin Robertson is a terrorist, as far as I'm concerned, what he preaches. And this guy here has the nerve to drive around the car, like, proclaiming that he supports Christ and opposes terrorism. So I left him a long letter, and it might have gotten slightly vulgar, but not to a certain degree. I tried to keep it a highbrow vulgar, you know, including things like ask, you know, right, and I hope you wear your crash helmet when you watch Fox News at night. You know, just little innuendos that probably went over their heads so they wouldn't understand what I was actually calling them at times. And, you know,
right.
I also said Robertson might have come from a certain body orifice on Satan himself, where the sun doesn't normally shine.
My goodness. So you really laid it on. Okay. Well,
I'm sure I got the point across to them that they look like fools at this point. And but, you know, I support everyone's right to free speech, but I think anyone who's foolish enough to still have 700 Club stickers on their cars deserve to get a little bit of a beating for that.
Well, I think that, you know, Spike, you know, I appreciate that comment, and I think that, you know, what we have out there in the guise of Christianity are people who are about control, manipulation, and hatred. You know, and I hate that because the majority of Christians that I know, that I'm personally, you know, that I have relationships with, are people that really do try to live by the tenets of their faith and are not about hatred and condemning other people as much as they are, you know, about, you know, trying to espouse the principles of that they believe in, which are like justice, you know, love, faith, kindness, all that good stuff. And I think it's a shame that you have people like Robertson on national television, you know, who basically, you know, there are people out there that are watching him and probably send him all their money. You know, it really bothers me because I don't believe he really truly represents mainstream Christianity. I mean, I can't believe that, because if I were to believe that, then I would have to condemn the entire religion, and I'm not prepared to do that yet.
No, they still a few good Christians out there. I mean, certainly everyone on the right likes to slam someone like a Phil Donahue, but you probably won't get to find a more faithful Christian than someone like a Phil Donahue, and he's that liberal because of the Bible, and his, you know, he went to Notre Dame. I mean, you can't get a bigger Catholic college in the world than that school, and he wants to help the poor, do things like that, whereas then you get these Bible thumpers who they just want to dominate the world in the name of God, which it just boggles my mind. I do have an issue, though, sometimes with people who like to hand you Bibles or stuff like that out of the blue in public.
Right.
That sometimes gets to me a little bit, because I just feel if someone wants to believe in a religion, then they'll follow it. And this, the Falwell and these types want to essentially brainwash people to hold their power, and I fear that the Christian idea of promoting Christ where you hand pamphlets out to people is just a little too over the top.
It is.
I mean, and I hope no one takes this the wrong way, but I've never had anyone hand me pamphlets trying to convert me to Judaism, and I actually respect them more for that. And I have certainly these people politically I disagree with in that religion too, but I have a lot more respect these days for that religion, because that religion doesn't seem to be as easily manipulated into what a lot of these Christian churches have. Like, there was one near Allentown that had big Bush Cheney 04 signs nailed to the side of their church. Like huge, like billboards.
Yeah.
You know, and that's ridiculous.
Well, Spike, we're getting right up hard to the top of the hour here, but I do appreciate you calling tonight.
Hey, no problem. Hey, I appreciate you having this show, and hopefully I'll have some stuff I'll be able to send you in the next few weeks here, too.
That sounds great, man. We'll look forward to talking to you next week.
Okay, have a good one.
Okay. And that was my friend Spike from Easton, PA. We're about 4 minutes before the top of the hour, and I was going to take a break, but didn't see any point in taking a break, because why take a break just to come back and say goodbye? Doesn't make sense, does it? But before we do go tonight, before we get out of here, you know, one thing that there's a couple real quick. I want to mention this story because I just found it to be completely reprehensible. And that is, the Pentagon has created a program that is supposed to help families laugh. This is from Greg Zoroya, USA Today. When the stress of the war in Iraq becomes too severe, the Pentagon has a suggestion for military families. Learn how to laugh. With help from the Pentagon's chief laughter instructor, families of National Guard members are learning to walk like a penguin, laugh like a lion, and blurt ha ha ha, he he, and ho ho. No joke. I laugh every chance I get, says the instructor, retired Army Colonel James Scotty Scott. That's why I'm blessed to be at the Pentagon, where we definitely need a lot of laughter in our lives. Scott, 57, is certified as a laughter training specialist by the Ohio-based World Laughter Tour, a group that promotes mirth as medicine. It touts scientific research that suggests chuckling can boost the body's immune system and decrease stress hormones. A Pentagon spokeswoman, Lieutenant Colonel Ellen Krenke, says the Pentagon is committed to the program and values Scott's skills. We sent him to the training, she says. The next sound you hear will be me puking. I'm sorry. I just couldn't help it. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Bruce Birch. This has been All Things Reconsidered. You can catch us online at allthingsreconsidered.org. Please stay tuned for Peter Werby coming up next. And we're going to send you out listening to someone whose birthday is commemorated tomorrow. Well, I was hoping that would happen, but it didn't. Okay, well, I guess we won't do that. that threw everything off. Tomorrow's Martin Luther King Day. If you would, please do...